Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business. When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
From the American Museum of Natural History in New York City, and beaming out across all of space and time, this is Star Talk, where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. And this episode of Star Talk, a Cosmic Queries edition, is focusing on neuroscience. And we go to our go-to person for that, and that would be the none other than Heather Boleyn. Heather, welcome back to Star Talk for the millionth time.
Thanks. I always love being here.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. And you are a neuroscientist at Mount Sinai, is that
yes,
correct?
Yeah.
The way to say that? Mm-hmm. And you focus on what people are thinking when they don't know they're thinking?
Sort of. Never heard it described that way. But no, I studied brains and how they relate to human thoughts, behaviors, whether they're conscious or unconscious.
Okay.
Emotions.
That's scary, actually. And we have a first timer here, my co-host, Jackie Hoffman. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you, Neil.
You're a comedian?
I am an actress / comedian.
In that order?
Yes.
Okay.
Right now, I'm doing more acting than comedianing.
Okay.
And I had a hysterectomy at Mount Sinai.
Oh, congratulations.
Is that TMI? Is that a TMI?
I hope they did a good job.
Uterus Awareness Week.
Okay. So let me join you in that and say I was born in Mount Sinai.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. And both my children were born in Mount Sinai.
Okay. But I never had a hysterectomy there. No.
You never know.
Sorry. Rolled you into the wrong room. So, Jackie, you said you also are an actress. You were you had a role in Legally Blonde 2.
Yes, Neil remembered my joke, my line.
What was it?
It was one line, your dogs are gay.
That was your one line in the movie.
Okay. It changed the world.
I would have given you more lines than that if I were producer of Legally Blonde 2.
Thank you.
Okay. So, also, you are in a all Yiddish production of Fiddler on the Roof off Broadway right now.
That is correct.
That's crazy.
With English subtitles, don't panic.
Okay. Yiddish has got to be like, that's how it would have been. They would have been speaking Yiddish.
That is correct.
Singing and dancing Yiddish. And your character is?
Yenta the Matchmaker.
Yenta. Yes,
Yenta. You can't get more Yenta than being Yenta.
Or Shadchan, as we say in Yiddish.
So you're playing my grandmother. Basically what you're playing, yeah.
Very cool. So since this is Cosmic Queries, we solicited from our fan base questions for this episode on neuroscience.
Great.
And what a topic that has become, Heather. There was a word no one knew 20 years ago, and now everybody's into it. So
I knew about it. There's...
Okay, not that nobody knew. Okay. Nobody else knew.
Right. Yeah.
And so, Jackie, you have the questions. I haven't seen them, neither has Heather. Mm-mm. And these are questions. Bring it on. Let's see what we've got.
Okay, our first comes from John Emerson from Patreon. I don't know what that is.
Oh, Patreon. That's our, they're a support website that help fund our operation.
Oh, nice. I thought it was a tequila.
so that's why you're reading their question first.
I see.
That's one of the perks, of the many perks you get as being
a Patreon supporter.
The
patrons at Patreon.
Patreon.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've heard that men are from Mars and women are from Venus. Well, that a little bit involves you, Neil.
Yeah, that's my expertise, Mars and Venus, all right?
I've heard that men are from Mars and women are from Venus, but are there any neurological differences between these two planetary species?
Ooh.
That's a good question for Yenta the Matchmaker, too.
It's been controversial in the past because often it's not been PC to say that there are differences between men and women's brains, but there are. They're both sort of anatomical differences, neurochemical differences, hormones that affect brain chemistry like oxytocin, things like testosterone and estrogen affect how the brain works. So we know that, for example, on average, and these are all, again, on average, women have slightly larger hippocampi, which is the part of the brain that has to do with memory. They tend to store emotional memories better than men. They tend to ruminate on things a little bit more than men, as we might know anecdotally. And in terms of like the way their brains are wired up, it's slightly different. Female, mm-hmm. female, yeah. Language, which tends to be lateralized, meaning that it's more on localized on the left side.
Lateralized would mean it's featured more in, for anything would mean it's more on one side than the other.
Exactly.
Lateralized.
Okay. So it tends to be more lateralized than men, meaning that more of their language is just on the left side, whereas women tend to have language on both in both hemispheres, like parts of the brain that are dedicated to language processing. They tend to use more words just and behaviorally during the day than men. So there are certain aspects of women's brain, both anatomically and physiologically, that differ from men, and they express themselves in different ways, behaviorally, emotionally, in terms of cognition.
So has this gotten resistance from society to even have that conversation?
There's some, you know, because then the idea is like, well, you know, well, then there's this myth like, okay, well, if a bigger brain must be better. Men on average have a physically larger brain, but that's not true in terms of intelligence, in terms of cognitive function. It's about how it's wired up. It's not about mm-hmm. the size. So, but people did get scared away from this because the idea, like, you know, famously, I think it was Larry Summers at Harvard who said, or, you know.
Then president of Harvard.
Yes, exactly. You know, women on, you know, don't tend to not be, do as well in like math and tech and that kind of thing. And those things are just not true. Mm-hmm. They tend to work in different ways, but they're not, there's no differences in terms of intelligence and correlated to brain size and the rest. So I think it's okay to say there are differences, and it's neither good or bad, it's just different.
So I thought his argument was the averages are all the same, but mm-hmm. men show up wider on mm-hmm. the distribution. So if you try to find the highest performing man, it comes way out on the high performing side. You also have a mm-hmm. much lower
right.
man on the other side, lower than you find the lowest woman.
They tend to be more on the extremes.
Right.
But again, that's, you know, on average. So that means that there are women who are mm-hmm. at these extremes as well, on average tend to be more at the men, more at the extremes in uh-huh. terms of that bell curve of IQ. But if you look at it overall.
Or bell curve of anything, yeah. right? I mean.
Yeah,
Isn't the shortest person ever a man?
Is that true?
Tom Thumb, I thought, was pretty small.
Yeah. But I don't know if that means that average. I mean, that's very, you know, an N of one.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
but women tend to live longer than men. So in that right. sense, we are at the extreme.
But also look at a personality, like, for example, charisma, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's some very charismatic men out there.
Mm-hmm.
And at the other extreme, you have completely complete sociopaths.
Right.
As men are do the most heinous social things ever, right? So again, we have these extremes that the men or they are might, overpopulating.
Right. Or they just might express them in different ways. Like one idea, just to go off a little bit on a tangent, but people who are sociopaths, men, mostly more diagnosed in men, have these kinds of impulsive behaviors, or they act out aggressively in others, and then they're categorized as that. But women also can tend to have those extreme behaviors, but they're more likely to be introverted and acted out on themselves, like self-harming behavior.
Oh, okay.
So there are similar expressions of, like, let's say impulsive behavior, but they're expressed different ways, and then they get categorized into different disorders.
So Jackie, are you from Mars or Venus? Which are you?
Saturn.
Saturn. Me too! Me too! Me too! Thank you. Excellent.
Put a ring on it.
Thank you, Beyonce. Hey, Jackie, got another question.
Yes, I do. Here's one close to my heart. Mm-hmm. From Herbalvores on Instagram. How do psychedelics work and what is the effect on the brain? And for personal reasons, I'd like to extend that question to marijuana as well.
Okay.
But did you just add that to the question?
I did. Am I allowed to do that?
Yeah, you control the questions. You want to slap in your own question.
I showed up.
So, I mean, that's a pretty broad question. There is a whole variety of different types of psychedelic drugs, and they all affect the brain in different ways. So it's not
Let's go LSD.
Okay. Let's just go LSD. Okay,
LSD,
that's a good
nice
one.
And clean nice, good and one. Famous, yeah.
Okay. So what LSD does in general is that it lowers activation in certain parts of the frontal lobe, which have to do with kind of, you have sensory information coming in, and the frontal lobe is kind of making meaning out of that information so that it makes sense of it all. When you have decreased activation in that part of the brain, the kind of meaning maker part of the brain, you're having a whole bunch of sensory information coming in without a filter, let's say. So it's being experienced in a different way. You also have increased activation in the limbic areas of the brain, these subcortical areas of the brain. So more information is coming from within. It's not being sort of organized in a logical way.
Is limbic, is that the reptilian
thing? Emotional, reptilian brain, exactly. And the other thing, so it is almost like being in a dream state, because during dreams, we see a similar pattern of activation, right? You have decreased prefrontal cortex, increased limbic. So you're having emotions and thoughts that don't necessarily make sense, that don't have a clear narrative. But you're also getting this sensory information that's unfiltered. And the other thing that's really interesting is that when you look at the way the brain is kind of sending information back and forth, usually it's in a very kind of, you have certain pathways that the brain sends information. But when they're on LSD, there's much more distributed network of information. So it's kind of like you'd see these a lot of straight lines and paths, and now they're crossing larger distances within the brain, the information. So it's just a whole different pattern of activation. So that makes you feel weird and trippy. Yeah.
Well, when we have time later, I'll ask you about my prescriptions and their effect on what's left of my
brain. Tell us what you're on right now. That's what we want to know.
The point, though, I think that's the most interesting is that we all are kind of hallucinating all the time, right?
Yeah,
because our brain is making up a story based on these like signals that are coming in. And then we often say that when we all agree upon it, we call it reality.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, this is a fascinating and important point. Mm-hmm. Because if you have your own understanding of reality and no one else can corroborate it.
Right.
That's just, we declare that it's going on in your head. We don't declare that you have some special insight into a reality that none of the rest of us have.
Right.
Is that fair to say? As from a brain person's perspective.
We all are making up our reality in our mind. But again, if nobody else is agreeing on what you're experiencing, then it's likely just being generated internally.
And scientifically, we have to assume that. Otherwise,
What do we base reality on?
What do we base reality on?
Tree falls in a forest and nobody hears it. Does it make a noise?
Is this why you asked about the marijuana?
That's a perfect segue to this next question.
Well, I don't know if I'm done with this. Wait a minute.
All right.
So, what do you say to people who would argue that when their brain has been altered by whatever, peyote, mm-hmm. Artificial chemicals,
whatever,
mm-hmm. that they're claiming insight
right.
into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
What do you say to them?
I've had these discussions with people. So let's say they see a spirit god and they get insight into the workings of the universe. I think it's important to understand that our brains are a physical mechanism. And a lot of things, just like dream states, it's creating its own internal world. And so often when we're in a fully awake, non-psychedelic state, where there's a certain part of our brain that tells us whether information is being internally generated or coming from externally.
Sure.
And when you're people with schizophrenia, for example, they don't have that proper check in place. So they think they're hearing voices that are coming externally in because they're not, their brain isn't telling them, no, it's you internally being generated. So when you're on these drugs, it's similar like when to a schizophrenic, things are being generated internally from your mind, but you're misinterpreting them as coming from someplace else, like from a spirit god or somewhere else, and that, or maybe you're getting some great insight that's coming from somewhere.
So the people talking to themselves on the street and who are not on a cell phone, they're really talking to themselves. They're not talking to some other entity.
But they are but they experience it as if it's another entity.
Yeah.
But I mean, look, this is not to say that there isn't some great answer that's coming through in different ways. But it is curious that people who get these messages when they're in these psychedelic states are usually related to their underlying personal or religious belief systems that they have in place already.
It folds in together with it.
Yeah. Which leads me to believe that it's internally generated, not externally.
Very good data on that.
Thank you very much,
Jackie. What you got next?
Well, I've got this real trippy one from Kevin Kalakimaka on Instagram.
Okay.
Is everything we experience a figment of our imagination?
Pretty much.
That dovetails right in.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, I wouldn't say everything we experience a figment of our imagination.
Wait, if I pinch you, that's not that imagination?
The way I experience it is created by my brain. Actually, I'd have to say no, because imagination.
All right, so yes or no? Come on.
Okay. Well,
make up your mind.
What am I,
no.
Cohen?
Moving on.
The Senate hearings.
Wait. Okay. Have you
Kevin,
ever?
Kevin, what are you thinking?
No. So let me insert something.
Okay,
here. In the movie The Matrix.
Yes.
Everything is happening inside their brains.
Yes.
Their sense of pain and joy and love and hate and hunger and all of that is inside the brain.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that is true. So everything you experience is pain. Every sensation you have is happening inside of your brain, right? Yes. But,
so therefore, to the question, so the answer to that is yes. Everything is a brain experience in your life. And you couldn't have had a plausible plot in the movie The Matrix unless that was true.
Yeah, but when you say, when this is the differentiation I'm making. Imagination in the sense of not correlating to something that's external to your brain. So you have a creation of an experience in your brain of what you're perceiving that could either be created internally, which I would call imagination, or that's coming externally from your senses in. And so, yes, they're both creations of your brain, but one is based on external data and the other coming
and
from
And the externality
in.
Is where we all rally around to say that's the reality.
Yeah, but the truth be told, we could create a whole sort of matrix world just based on sensory inputs that aren't
and
really
what's that
there.
Other movie Total Recall. You want to go on a vacation to Acapulco. Sit in this chair and I will implant the memories of it in you, and now you wake up and say, wow, I had a good time in Acapulco.
I mean, it is just as good. It could be just as good. We are beginning to blur the line. Or better.
If you can know how to do it,
because you can skip all the boring parts like the taxi rides
and waiting for your luggage.
Exactly.
Right.
Fast forwarding.
Mm-hmm.
But with your brain.
Yes.
Time for one more for this segment. What do you have, Jackie?
Ooh, that's a tough choice, but I think I've got one. Brian's side on Instagram. If sight is the process of the brain creating an image of reality after it interprets the signal from the eyes sent when they interact with the electromagnetic field, can a blind person create an image based on the signal sent from the other senses to the brain? In other words, can a blind person see something?
Yeah. So it depends on, okay, so our brain.
Wait, you know something?
What?
That's a really good question.
Should I wait till after the break?
Wait till after the break answer to that question.
Cliffhanger.
And since the word electromagnetic was mentioned in there, I would just say that's the word we use to describe the entire spectrum of light, not only the visible light, Roy G. Biv, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, but the infrared, ultraviolet, X-rays, gamma rays, microwaves, radio waves. All of that is the electromagnetic spectrum. Only a tiny slice of it are we sensitive to with our eyes. So what's interesting is we have this mechanism called our eyeballs that takes that and turns it into an image, and it's all neurological at that level. Well, once your people get good at neurological stimulus, I don't see why you can't take any external stimulus and turn it into an image in a brain, even of someone who is blind. When we come back on Star Talk, we're going to find out, how can the blind see? Heather has the answer to that. All right, when we return.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
The future of space and the secrets of our planet revealed. This is Star Talk.
We're back on Star Talk, Cosmic Queries, Neuroscience Edition. And we had went to our go-to neuroscience person, Heather Berlin. Heather, yes. Very nice. I got Jackie Hoffman, a first-timer, as my co-host. Plus, you tweet at Jackie Hoffman 16.
I do.
What is the 16?
I don't know. My manager picked it because there was another Jackie Hoffman. That's your query cosmic answer.
Wow.
Cosmic with a K.
That is the lamest answer I've ever
heard. I know.
Heard.
It's the truth.
Ever. Heather, you're tweeting.
I'm honored to have the lamest answer ever on this show.
Heather, you tweet at Heather Berlin?
Heather underscore
excuse me,
Berlin
underscore. Because
the same reason.
Yeah, I don't like the underscore. It's so ugly.
Because you have to keep changing your keyboard.
Because sometimes
so
you can't
work. See
it. I prefer the dash. Wow. Yeah, I've never been an underscore
now
guy.
It's a little bit too late, but you could have told me that before.
Okay. She's worth it, though. She's so worth the extra
worth
keys.
The underscore. Thank you, Jackie, for the endorsement.
So we last left off with a question about I'm going to slightly rephrase the question. Knowing that we have multiple senses into the brain, can you take one sense and turn it into another to possibly grant the sense of sight back to a blind person?
Okay.
But maybe the sense of smell or touch. And isn't there this brain, we call it a disorder, called synesthesia?
Synesthesia. Yeah.
Does that relate to this answer?
There's a lot here. So let me just say that it depends on when the blindness occurred. So when you're born, it's in many ways, it's the gray matter. It's like a blank slate. And then it starts to differentiate based on the inputs it's getting. So the visual cortex in your brain gets inputs from the retina via the optic nerve, sends information. And then over time, it keeps getting inundated with that visual information. So it starts to become the visual cortex where you experience visual imagery. Now, there are experiments, let's say, with weasels where they take them early on and they redirect that visual information to the what's normally the auditory cortex.
Oh.
And over time, they start to see with their auditory cortex, okay?
Whoa.
So you can, depending on how you change the inputs to the brain, you can kind of change what sensory processes.
So there's a malleability if it happens early.
Early,
okay.
Right. Now if you take an adult blind person who's already kind of formed their sensory parts of their brain, what you might experience is that if they were born blind and now they're an adult, they have, what we do see in people is that they have a more well-developed auditory cortex because they're getting much more auditory input.
Well, they're relying on it more.
They're relying on it more. It kind of recruits other parts of the brain. And some can sort of have a weird sense of seeing via sound. So they experience it in different ways. And the other part of this is that there are programs now, neural implants, where you can actually, they can get information from the real world, like through a camera, directly, you implant it directly into the visual cortex, and it'll stimulate the visual cortex as if it's information coming from the eyes. And people can begin to sort of start to see strange sort of images. Not like seeing the way you and I do, but...
Anything is better than seeing nothing.
Exactly. Right. And as you perfect this technology over time, we might be able to really stimulate the parts of the visual cortex so the person can see.
We already do that now auditorially with the...
Cochlear
device.
Yes.
A NASA invention, I might add.
Ah,
yes.
All good things come from NASA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And there's a famous talk show host who got that NASA implant, and it's Rush Limbaugh. He was going
Whoa.
Deaf.
Oh.
I only learned this recently. He went like almost completely deaf, and then he got the operation, which so it actually hears for you and trans and converts external sound waves into impulses that your ear canal would have otherwise done.
Yeah.
And I don't think you hear the sound as you normally would. But you can hear differences in sounds that you retrain to learn what a word is mm-hmm. when you hear those impulses.
And can I say one thing about synesthesia?
Yeah,
it's really
sure.
Cool.
Sure.
So synesthesia is where people sort of have a crossing of sensory areas in the brain. So, for example, they'll see colors in sounds or something. They'll hear things in written text. So this one study was really interesting where they found that certain people always saw like letters as certain colors. Like an A, they'd be like, A is obviously red. Like
obviously,
B
of
is
course.
Blue. C is green, whatever it was. And what they did is they did a large study across all these synesthetes who had that particular...
Synesthetes?
Yes.
That's a thing. Synesthetes.
There's a whole community of synesthetes. And they did a survey and they all saw A as red and B as blue. And it was a strange sort of coincidence, we thought. And then they all happened to be born around the same time when this particular Fisher-Price, you know those magnets that you would put on the like refrigerator
Whoa.
And it were
letters and numbers.
Whoa. Yeah. And their synesthesia directly correlated with that Fisher-Price set that
Whoa.
Came out when they were kids. So basically when their brain was in the early stages of development and they were exposed to it, they learned an association between those colors and letters, which remained Whoa. Into adulthood. So it had to do with a cross-wiring in the brain.
Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why I associate every letter with food, because they were on the
refrigerator.
So I am an amblyopete. I have amblyopia. In my right eye. So what I understand is now my brain is not telling my eye to look at things. It sits there like a useless Hulk and my whole life is on my left side. I have no vision out of the right eye. When I cover the left eye, it can look at things, but my brain is not talking to it.
Oh, and you were born with this?
I was born with it.
So you can
Amblyotopia?
Amblyopia. I just called myself an amblyopete just to keep up with
just
the
so, just so you can hang. You just want to hang with the
There's
other people.
There's a peeps. Whole community now.
I'm amblyopete.
Everybody tweet at you who's an amblyopete. You can build a community. But no, I think that, so basically it's interesting. You can only see out of it when you cover the other eye. Is that
yes,
what you're saying?
Yes, that's correct.
But you probably can, it probably is getting visual information in.
Right.
But the other eye is dominant.
Yes. So, the doctor said, if God forbid anything happens to the good eye, the bad eye will grow and
exactly,
learn.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm. It's almost like it's basically like a lazy eye that it because the other eye is so dominant, you kind of over time don't utilize the information coming from that eye, and the other one becomes stronger, the other one becomes weaker.
Right.
And
when I was a child, they covered it with patches, the good eye, to try to strain. And it was pointless. I just kept walking into furniture, which would explain a lot.
We can talk about head injury in the next segment.
Next, what do you have?
Okay. From Serena Rockauer on Instagram. What will it take to bring mental health awareness into the mainstream? Why is it still such a stigma? What is it about intelligence in unconventional ways that makes it so taboo?
I don't understand the second half of that. What does it have to do with intelligence?
I think that's probably more of a, like, why some people say that people with mental illness are just intelligent in different ways. I think that's probably related to that. Mm-hmm. But I think that...
Yeah, tell me about the history of mental, the stigma of mental illness, the history of that.
Because it's sort of a invisible disorder in the sense, like, if you break an arm, it's very clear it's a physical problem, or, you know, you're... the heart is having problems, that you can look at the physicality. And the brain is so complex, and there's so much going on in terms of neurochemicals and neurophysiology, that when things go wrong in the brain, they're hard to just look at and see physically. And they express themselves in these sort of subjective states. A person, you never can really tell if they're depressed. They tell you, I feel depressed.
Right. Yeah, they give you a scale, 1 to 10. What are you?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And so it's all subjective. And because of that subjectivity, people have questioned the validity of it, because you can't take a microscope and see it. So now, as a cognitive neuroscientist who works in psychiatry, part of what we do is to say, look, these psychiatric illnesses, this is the underlying brain dysfunction. And we need to get away from this stigma, like it's all just in your mind, like it's not a real physical thing, and say, no, the brain is a physical organ, just like you would fix a bone with a cast. If the brain is improperly working, you can take this particular medication that's going to, say, affect your serotonin receptors. It's just another physical problem. Mm. But because it expresses itself in a subjective way, there's a stigma behind it. So I think we're starting to get away from that
stigma. I would think so, too. Yeah. And you know what I base that on? Mm-hmm. How candidly people just say, oh, yeah, my therapist told me the other day.
Right.
When growing up, you would never tell anyone that you had a therapist for any reason.
Yes.
And now just people just, they're just out with it.
Yeah.
People you just meet, right? And so for me, that's one measure of an acceptance factor.
Yeah.
What's going on in
society. It can also manifest itself in embarrassing ways, too, mental illness. You know, someone on the street, you know,
right.
I do that for a living.
You bark at people. That's what you do.
Yeah, but I do bark at people for a living. But, you know, I think that creates such a stigma, and it's frightening. It's frightening that could be me, and it's just, what is that?
You can't predict the next moment of their behavior.
People use those extreme cases, you know, like I worked with psychiatric patients in the ER at Bellevue at one point, and these were really severe. These are people, you know, those are the ones you pull off the street and you bring them in the psych ER, and they're really out there.
And you strap them down, right?
And or you give them something to calm them down, or you know, and so people look at those extremes and say, wait, am I the same as that? You know, like paranoid schizophrenic, and you know, to be honest, I've worked with paranoid schizophrenics who are not at that extreme, who are really like nice, decent people, and they just happen to be having these, you know, strange delusions. And we can change it with drugs, which is amazing. You can give them a drug and they no longer have these sort of crazy
better living
ideas.
Through chemistry.
Yeah. Not that I'm a huge proponent of drugs, but I think, you know, if it's broken, you have to find ways to fix it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Jackie, what else you got for us?
Okay, loving this. Monica Stewart from Facebook. I had a brain tumor, a meningioma the size of a baseball, removed through a craniotomy last year. How could it get so big before affecting my motor function, speech, memory, etc.? What do we know about brain tumors in general? Y'all are my heroes. Sending love from Texas.
Texas in the house.
That's a good question.
So Heather,
of course, in Texas, they grow their tumors bigger.
Of course, everything's bigger.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
You got a baseball-sized tumor. Everybody else has got a
golf ball-sized
tumor. So, yeah, so I'm. It's not just in the brain. Tumors in other parts of people's bodies, they don't even know.
Yeah.
Until they go out there, and then it's always analogized to a fruit or an athletic football. So what's going on there?
Well, it depends on where the tumor is. What did she say she had? A meningioma?
Yes.
Yeah. So that grows in the meninges of the brain, which is basically
I could
like
guess that.
That you could have got that one. That was an easy one.
I could.
A multiple choice test.
You would have got that
I would have gotten that one right. The meninges is
the meninges are the basically like the sort of membrane covers around the brain.
Okay.
And you can get these growths. So it's not directly in the sort of brain tissue, but what happens is it can get really big, and the problem is it starts putting pressure on the brain. So depending on where it's located, if it was located right next to where, like, let's say the language area was, and it started pressing and pressure, you might start having problems with your language. So, but depending, it could be in an area where it's relatively benign and that you won't get these immediate problems or memory problems because those are subcortical.
You're saying
areas.
It was putting pressure on an unimportant part of her brain.
Well, I mean, they're all important, but sometimes they
don't. What you just said. You just said, Jackie, didn't she just say that?
Well, a less verbal part of the brain.
I was listening with my eyes.
Which one?
The good one.
Yeah, so it depends on where it is that it will express itself in ways that are obvious to you. Like, it might express itself in other ways, and it might be that, you know, the pressure over time, you'll start having other symptoms like headaches, or but not necessarily the ones like motor problems. But the different types of tumors. So there's some tumors like glioblastoma, which is very deadly, which is growing inside the brain tissue. And
that's
it's
in the
getting,
glioplast part of the brain.
Well, exactly. Oh, good job, Neil.
Damn. Okay.
But that's more insidious, and it gets and kind of the nooks and crannies and actual cortex. And that's when we go in to remove it, you can never really get all of it because it has these tiny little tentacles that get in. So they always grow back. They grow back. And that's why people don't usually tend to live longer than a year after that. So, and with the meningiomas, like 90% of them are benign, which is also good.
That's
so you
good.
Can remove it and usually it won't grow back. But yeah, okay. So there are a whole variety of different tumors and have different effects on the brain.
Interesting. Cool. And kind of ideally want one to have an effect to affect you at the smallest stage it can so that you can get to it sooner.
Yeah, so that's a whole thing.
That's a thing, right?
Yeah, because...
Yeah, so maybe a smaller tumor would have given her motor problems or speech problems. If something's wrong, the tumor is a golf ball. Right. Rather than a baseball.
But sometimes they don't even go in and if it's like benign, they might wait a while to go in and remove it anyway, even when they find it. Because there's some risk with surgery, and depending on where it's located.
There's risk opening up your skull and
just
poking around your brain?
Little,
really? Okay.
A little.
Hi, Jackie, what else you got?
My uterine one was 22 centimeters, by the way.
Oh, wow. That's a dude. Okay.
why does the brain... Oh, this is from... And that's the end of my story on Instagram. Why does the brain create images in the form of dreams when we sleep? Do dreams have meaning or function, or are they just a random collection of images? What are the physiological advantages of dreaming? Thank you from Nikki Hush.
Nikki, good question. Gotta do that fast. Or,
okay.
Or give me part of the answer, and then we save the rest of the answer for...
Should I give you part of the question?
How about this? Let me give a short version of that question.
Okay.
We can answer that before the break, and then you give the...
The long answer.
The long answer to the longer question.
Okay.
So people want to believe that their dreams give them insight into some future events. The dreamers. My sense of that is the answer is no. But people feel like they have access to the future through their dreams. Why?
After the break.
Damn, Heather. Okay, after the break, we continue with our special edition of Cosmic Queries Neuroscience. Here we go again.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley. For the love of home.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The future of space and the secrets of our planet revealed. This is Star Talk.
Star Talk, we're back. Neuroscience. Our go-to person, Heather Berlin.
Wow. Go-to person now. I like
go-to,
it.
Go-to, go-to. Like and Jackie Hoffman, comedian
Hello.
Extraordinaire.
Your go-away-from person.
So, we left off. Someone asked...
About dreams?
About dreams. And all I can think of is... Sigmund Freud's book on the interpretation of dreams. Where have we come since then?
Yeah. So I think Freud was right in certain things and not in others. He was certainly on point with his whole theories of repression and dissociation and suppression. I think his interpretation...
And also subconscious, right?
Oh, yeah. That, of course, id, ego, superego, yeah, unconscious. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was good. The whole theory of consciousness and unconscious processes. However, his whole interpretation of dreams was kind of fringy.
I tried reading it. It was like, this is all bullshit.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. Sorry, guys, but there's a lot of theories about why we dream. I mean, the shortest answer is that it's random neural firing, and you only dream during REM sleep, by the way. So when your brain is in a certain, we go through different stages
REM,
of sleep.
Rapid eye movement.
Exactly.
Or the yeah. rock group.
REM, that's yes, true. Okay. Oh, I never thought of them that way. That's it. Oh, anyway.
That's what it said. That's yeah, why they name themselves that.
REM. Yeah. Oh, okay. Good
You're a nurse. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
Well, I just schooled you on REM?
Yes. Okay. But there are different stages of sleep, like deep sleep, and then, you know, your brain goes. But when it's in the sort of this dream state, it's almost like a waking state. And so your brain, in a way, is conscious of what's going on. It, not always. Sometimes you dream, you don't remember you dreamt, right? But usually you're dreaming in that state. And it's random firing of the brain. It doesn't make sense.
Wait. If you dreamed and don't remember you dreamed, then how do you know you dreamed?
Well, you can look at you don't know.
Just kidding,
it's like a tree. Is this the tree question? But in dream form,
you said you dream, but you don't remember. Then how did you know you dreamed?
Well, you don't know, but we assume.
Was it your electrodes again?
That
you
yeah,
say, well, they're dreaming.
There's an interesting case, just side note. There's a case of people who like don't remember things. They only have a short memory, and so they just feel like they're just waking up and being conscious for the first time every minute because they keep like refreshing.
Wow.
So, but I mean, you could have a conscious experience and not remember it, but it's still you had that experience in the moment. But the point is that these dreams don't. A lot of it is a cleaning out. So you take in a lot of information, a lot of stimulation during the day, and then the brain has to decide what's important enough to reinstantiate, to keep, and to reinforce, and to kind of throw away,
reinstantiate,
or reinforce.
That's a word.
Yeah, I don't know. Did I make it up? I might have made that up.
Reinstantiate.
Or just instantiate?
No, it's all new. Every syllable of that word, it was new to me.
I might have made up a word.
No, that's
I do
fine.
That sometimes.
I like made up words.
But you get what
After
I'm saying.
After you instantiate the first time, Neil.
You reinstantiate.
Thank
you very
Thank
much.
You.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
I bet you it's a real word. What it does is it reinforces the important information and consolidates. That's a better word. It consolidates the information. And then it gets rid of other stuff that's sort of junky. And so in that whole process, your brain is firing, there's neurons firing, and there's if you're in one of those brain states during sleep where you're sort of conscious, that information is going to manifest itself in a kind of a dream state. It's going to be based on things you've been exposed to in your life. It's going to be based on memories, things that your brain has, information your brain has taken in over the course of your life or over the course of the day. So you'll place meaning on it when you wake up. You'll try to make sense of it because that's when the prefrontal cortex is re-engaged. Remember, that meaning maker part of the brain. But in the actual dream, it's more like a flow state or like what we see in people who are in flow states or meditative states or psychedelic drugs.
Wow.
So I hope that answers the question. I don't know. There's a lot. I mean, you could have a whole series on dreams.
Okay, so suppose there are people who don't dream or don't remember any of their dreams. Are they less mentally with it?
Well,
in other words, are dreams good to remember or bad to even matter?
Well, one theory is that it's a threat rehearsal so that you can actually work out things in your dream states that help you in real life.
For survival.
Yes, for survival. So there is some aspect of it that might be important to help people for survival in the sense that it's a good thing.
And some people have recurring dreams.
Right. And that might be with, and then Freud might have it right there where there's some issues that are being suppressed that they might want to work out. Okay.
So is it false that we do dream every night? We just don't always remember it? Or
I mean, the theory is that we dream every night. Again, it's very hard to prove, but we don't always remember it. And there is some validity. I don't want to like throw Freud completely under the bus, that when you have in the waking state certain suppressed memories and thoughts, that when the prefrontal cortex is on, it can keep things at bay, like emotions and memories. And when it's releasing that inhibition, those things can come to the surface and then come out in dreams, like things that you normally are not aware of in your waking state.
Okay.
So it is a way to access the unconscious, but not to like predict the future.
I have actors' nightmares constantly.
Really?
Anxiety dreams that actors have, and it's a real thing.
Like you're on stage,
you don't know your lines, you don't know why you're there, you don't know what you're in. My last one was I sang something wrong and the composer and lyricist were right in my one good eye line.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just your normal, like your anxieties and fears manifesting themselves.
Do you have those dreams in Yiddish?
I don't express that enough during the day.
Because your character is Yiddish?
I dream in color, but not in Yiddish.
Not in Yiddish.
I dream from right to left.
For those just joining us, Jackie is Yenta in Fiddler on the Roof in an all Yiddish version.
With English subtitles.
English subtitles. Okay.
Don't panic.
All right, give me another one.
Okay. Here's a quickie. This is good from Arik Subramanyam on Instagram. Do you need a brain to feel pain as we know it? Do jellyfish, for instance, feel pain?
Good question.
I like that. Yeah. So you don't need a brain.
Or a lobster, because people eat lobsters.
Yes.
They scream when you put them in the water.
Yeah, but you know that actually it's illegal now in the EU to cook lobsters alive, because we claim them, they're conscious. There's enough evidence that they experience pain and that they have consciousness. So you don't.
So instead of putting them in the boiling water, you kill them some other way.
First, and then you can
compassionate. But
what? I think you can. Also, octopus. I think that's what it is as well. You can't. Also kill an octopus in a way that, because we know that they're very smart and very conscious.
So is there a neurological primitivity where you would say they're not really feeling this pain some animal out there?
Okay, so the answer is you don't need a brain. You do need some sort of nervous system.
Oh, right, of course. You can have a nervous system without a brain.
Without a brain. And so like a jellyfish has that in its tentacles. It kind of has like a neural net. And so if you give it some noxious stimuli or you like poke its tentacle, it will move away. It will retract.
Therefore, it feels pain.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as we always say, you know, I don't
earthworms will move away from pain.
Right. So it's about like, that's how we kind of have to measure it behaviorally, because even with a human, you know, the pain, again, it's a subjectivity. When you go to the hospital, you know, something's wrong. They say, okay, on a scale of 1 to 10, how painful is it?
No,
right?
Now they have a smiley face or
sad
face. Oh,
yeah, that's right. Yeah. Because people...
The numbers.
They couldn't handle the numbers.
The numbers were
too much. It's got to simplify. Yeah, so we don't know, but we can tell, okay, look, you retract as if you're feeling pain. So I was at a whole meeting where we were talking about animal consciousness and how low down the sort of food chain does it go. And we had a whole discussion about fish. And fish, can they feel? And the answer is yes. I mean, they have a noxious stimuli. They'll retract from it. They record a memory, so they'll avoid that stimuli again. So it's as if they're experiencing something.
So how do they kill the lobster before you cook it?
I don't know.
Lethal injection.
Lethal injection. By the way, we had on Star Talk, I interviewed the founder of PETA.
Oh.
And many people associate PETA with just being, you know, all veggie, no killing of animals. Uh-huh. To hear her speak, the philosophy was very different. It was not that she's against killing animals. Mm-hmm. She's against the infliction of pain on animals.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what about lobsters? She said she has people working on some kind of anesthetizing first pass at the lobster before you then put it in the boiling water.
Yeah.
Just to show you the purity of that mission statement. And so I bet you if there was a package of that sold next to lobsters, people would buy it, of course.
Yeah.
You would, of course, I think people would do that. If you're rich enough to buy the lobster, you got enough money to buy the lobster anesthetizer.
Yes.
Before you cook it.
And just wait, minor correction. I think it's the the illegality in the EU is of first octopus or octopi. I never know what.
Octopoid.
Octopoid.
Yes.
Not lobsters. I just remember that in the recesses of my mind. So you can still horribly damage a lobster when you boil it alive. However, I think that the real issue is about how animals are treated and if they are killed in a way that doesn't cause them drama or trauma or stress.
Or drama.
And drama. We don't want drama either.
The drama queen.
I do.
Exactly. Or like, you know, Temple Grandin.
We have an actor here. Oh. She wants drama. Yeah.
Can I tell you my drama?
Mm-hmm. I know it's lame, but I still do it. Mm-hmm. Anytime I cook a lobster, before I put it in the water, I remove the rubber bands from the claws so that it can try to bite me as its one last act of survival.
That is, like, really sadistic.
No,
I think.
I'm saying, into that lobster mind.
If I'm cooking alive, at least give it a chance to fight back.
Aww.
So I take off the rubber bands, and then they pop open, the claws pop open, and then it can try to bite me. And I have to then triumph over, of course I do, because I'm smarter than a lobster.
So you give him one, like, fighting chance.
One last chance. It's just, it's my
so
own.
So he can die with dignity.
Dignity, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, okay, so tell me about Temple Grandin.
I was just going to say Temple Grandin.
Who, by the way, has been a guest on Star Talk.
Oh, she's great.
One of my favorite shows.
Oh, so interesting.
Temple Grandin.
So she has autism, and she was sort of very much aware of she can sort of empathize with how the animals were feeling, and she created this whole system of when they go to slaughter, that they would gently be like, so it wasn't stressful for them or sort of anxiety provoking. They would get like sort of guided through this sort of, they were kind of like tunnels into the slaughterhouse in a way that was so they couldn't see what was happening in front of them. And it was like this really humane way to bring them there without just, you know, throwing them in and giving them all the anxiety of stress like they're about
corralling them and then here.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I thought that was really humane.
Plus, there are people in the vegetarian movement that hate her for that because she made it.
Right.
That much more humane to kill an animal that the vegetarians didn't want killed in the first place.
Yes, yes. So we can go deeper into that. But the answer is you don't need a brain, but you need, I think, a nervous system.
Okay, cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got to go lightning round, Jackie.
Lightning.
Let me try to do
this. Oh.
There we go.
This is scary. So we just have to do quick, like.
Yes, sound bites. We're going to do sound bites. Okay, here we go. Jackie, give it to me.
From Sampan Gosal on Facebook, how are memories physically stored in the brain? Also, can we implant fabricated memories in some way?
Ooh.
Yes, they're in the brain via long-term potentiation, which is a physical process that connects neurons to each other or makes them sort of what fires together, wires together. That's the quickest. Hebbian synapse, it's called.
Cool. So the more they fire together, the more they will remain connected
in such
a way that they form a memory.
Yeah.
Next one, quick.
I've always been your Sancho on Instagram. What does it mean to focus on something? How does it work?
Ooh, good one.
And that means
attention.
It's attention. And what it is that there's part of your brain called the dorsolateral prefrontal cortex that's activated.
That's way too many syllables.
When
you all got to work
on
that.
DFLPC. DLFPC. Anyway, so you can engage certain parts of your prefrontal cortex that filter out extraneous information, and your kind of mental energy is focused on a particular bit of information.
So part of the focus is taking away things that would distract.
Yes, yes. And that's why people who have problems with their attention is that they're too easily distracted. They're not good at focusing in because of the distractions.
Cool. Got it.
What? I'm sorry.
Give me one more.
Listening. Jack Perry 8 on Instagram. Will a brain transplant or full body transplant ever become a reality?
That's what I want to know, because you have the Lou Gehrig's disease folks where their body decays. What is it?
ALS.
And then you have the Alzheimer's folks, where their brain goes away.
Yes.
And I'm thinking in the future, you get the brain of the ALH person and put it in the body of the Alzheimer's person. Then you get one whole human there.
Yeah. If only we could reconnect and regrow.
Is that going to come?
I don't think we're close to it.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So I'm going to have to say no, but maybe in the next like hundreds of years, 200 years, maybe. But if we can figure out how to
put a man on the moon, you can't do a brain transplant?
I highly doubt it. Yeah, I'm going to say no. That's a no.
That's a no.
Okay. You wanted lightning.
You heard it
you
here
got
first.
It.
There's a lot of reasons why. We'll get into it later.
Well, Dr. Frankenstein did a brain transplant.
Yeah.
He got the abnormal.
That's
they
true.
They did one on Star Trek, brain. Too, Spock's brain.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
We can probably replace a brain with silicon at some point. like silicon-based brain. But I don't know about taking a biological human brain and putting it on another body.
What, you don't mean silicon, the element on the periodic table, you mean a computer brain?
A computer brain.
Yeah, that's what you mean.
Yeah. So the idea is if you can replace one neuron with a silicon chip that does exactly the same function on and off, and then another and another and another, at some point...
In principle,
you can replace the whole brain.
Right,
yeah, and
right.
inside a body.
But would it dream?
Oh.
We have run out of time for this special neuroscience edition of Star Talk Cosmic Queries. Heather, as always, thanks for being such a friend of Star Talk. And you're one of our Star Talk all-stars. And it's always great to have you back.
Thank you.
And we don't see enough of you. So we should do every episode on the brain, don't you think, guys?
Everything involves the brain. Come on, let's do it.
Jackie Hoffman, great. I'm going to try to get tickets to your Yiddish production, English subtitles, of Fiddler on the Roof, particularly with you playing Yenta. That's got to be hilarious.
I like to think so, with my brain. Boy, this was exhausting, and I was the stupid one.
So you've been listening to, possibly even watching, this episode of Star Talk. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist. As always, I bid you to keep looking up. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, guys.
Fine.
That's how we roll on Star Talk. This is how we roll.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.